What place does anger have in the life of a Christian? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author. We continue our series on the book of Jeremiah. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Matilda Fry from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Today we take up two more of Jeremiah's confessions, or those dialogues with God, and these are some of the more wrenching ones. And I want to, before we pick up that question of what place does anger have in the life of a Christian, I want us to hear these two of them. One is from Jeremiah 18, 18 to 23, and the other one is Jeremiah 20, 14 to 18, so that we get a feel for what happens. And then I want to address the practical question, how do we deal when we have this kind of anger in our system? Okay, first of all, Jeremiah 18, 18 to 23. This is from the Contemporary English Version. It's the first version of the Bible designed to be heard by the ear. Now, I've actually memorized this passage. I felt guilty for doing it because it's such a violent passage.
You do it with the CEV?
CEV.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it flows so smoothly. And I'm going to try to read it the way that I think Jeremiah probably said it, and it comes clear in the Contemporary English Version. So, beginning with verse 19, "Please, Lord, answer my prayer. Make my enemies stop accusing me of evil. I tried to help them, but they are paying me back by digging a pit to trap me. I even begged you not to punish them. But now I am asking you to let their children starve or be killed in war. Let women lose their husbands and sons to disease and violence. These people have dug pits and set traps for me, Lord. Make them scream in fear when you send enemy troops to attack their homes. You know they plan to kill me, so get angry and punish them. Don't ever forgive their terrible crimes."
Amen. Wow.
Wow, I was right. Now, the other one is the lament from Jeremiah 20, verses 14 to 18. And this, again, is from the Contemporary English Version. "Put a curse on the day I was born. Don't bless my mother. Put a curse on the man who told my father, 'Good news, you have a son.' May that man be like the towns you destroyed without pity. Let him hear shouts of alarm in the morning and battle cries at noon. He deserves to die for not killing me before I was born. Then my mother's body would have been my grave. Why did I have to be born? Was it just to suffer and die in shame?" Now, those are the deep anguish of the prophet.
And that's the right word, Alden. It's anguish.
Anguish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I would like to, first of all, address the practical question. Is it possible to suppress our anger when it actually should be allowed to boil at injustice? Are there things for which we should be angry? Or well, should Christians always be calm and cool and quiet?
I like your question, but I want to just point out that in my mind there's a difference between anger and anguish.
Yes.
I think anguish can produce anger, but anguish is this wrenching of the soul over something that is not only wrong, but it's harmful, and seemingly there's no remedy.
Right.
But, you know, I think it can lead on to anger. And in answer to your question, I think that sometimes we repress anger too often.
If you repress it, it will almost always pop out at places where you don't expect it.
Yeah.
Yes, but where it's not, where it should not be, because it affects other people.
Sure.
It destroys relationships with others. And that is what we should not.
Yeah, but anger also has a very variable function in life. You know, anger is a very powerful emotion that properly expressed can do a lot to alleviate wrong. You know? But
well, talking about suppression, those of us who've been here for a while know what happened to Daryl Bigger after his daughter was murdered. We were all astonished at how Barbara and Daryl both were able to live without anger. For a period of time. Anthony was sentenced to life parole, and then Daryl told what happened. And he told this in a sermon. He probably shouldn't have preached that week, but he got the letter. And Anthony's attorney was opening the question again. And Daryl said he was just overwhelmed with a powerful sense of anger. It just It just was like a Vesuvius, and he couldn't control it. Now, here he's a pastor, he's a trained counselor, and it's just, oh, you know. So I think that's a classic example that if you shout it down, it will be very problematic.
Yeah, I think it's problematic on a personal level, but I'm interested in anger more in what it accomplishes in life.
The positive side.
Yes, I mean that an angry person is somebody who is not easily deterred from not only announcing the wrong, but wanting to do something about it.
Yes, that's right.
How many of us are well equipped to take on an angry person? Mm. You know, I especially laugh when a man has to handle an angry woman because men have no tools for handling angry, you know. I don't like that circumstance, but it's a funny one. But, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't make mention of the fact that the Apostle Paul talks about several cautionary boundaries that should be placed around anger. First, it should not be self-serving, see, which troubles me a little bit about. I'm not sure about this first lament of Jeremiah here. He wants his enemies destroyed. So you know, it's better if anger is not self-serving. Secondly, it should not be nursed. You should not keep it going. By evening time, it should be settled down.
Let me read that passage because you're talking about Ephesians 4, 25 to 27.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. In fact, at a time when we had a very difficult experience here at Walla Walla University, we went to a faculty meeting, and there was an outburst at the board meeting, and our president told us that even our friends on the board were unhappy because we had spilled our guts, so to speak, with the accreditation visitor. But it was the next Sabbath in Sabbath school class at W.G. Nelson, and he made the comment. He says, maybe for the first time we're really being honest. And I've discovered a line from from Graham Greene, who puts this in the mouth of one of his short story characters. In her experience, it was Marie Duval. It was only when a man became angry that he told the truth. See? And what I discovered there was, you know, and it just that Ephesians 4, the passage you were talking about, is talking about the anger of communication. Let me just read it for you because it touches on the points you were mentioning. So then, putting away falsehood, let all of us speak the truth to our neighbors, for we are members of one another. Be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not make room for the devil.
Because anger is a very dangerous emotion.
It is. Yeah. See, and I'm convinced when Jesus said, love your enemies, he wasn't concerned, first of all, about the enemies. Because we can destroy ourselves comes there. So I would say that the anger of communication is one time. Now, let me tuck in there murderous anger, Matthew. Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
I don't know that murderous anger can ever be justified.
No, because it's out of control.
It's out of control.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why Jesus says, you know, you've heard it said, you shall not commit murder. But I say to you, even if you're angry at a brother, in the murderous sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is really very true. Then the other passage, and this is the one that I think is so tantalizing, it's what I call the anger of purity, where you react against something that really, you don't have any places in the Old Testament where it says, you have heard that it was said, you know, about.
I say you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but there is one psalm that I think comes close to that, Psalm 139, 21 and 22. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. See? Boy.
Yeah, you know, I remember once I had a church member who was very poor, who was talked into a car loan by a car dealer that was going to result in him paying about three times as much for the car as, and when I found it out, I was so angry, I called up the dealer myself, and I said, look, I cannot stand. But it had been more than 3 days, and they wouldn't back down, so there was no choice. But I remember it happened to me another time when I went to visit an old lady. She was 84, and somebody had just sold her a whole life insurance policy. That's the kind of policy where you accumulate cash. She would not give me the person's name because I was going to, you know, not for my own self, but just rail against the injustice of that. I mean,
Well, it is the situation that brings us to that point. And if we need when see the need to change that situation, this strong feeling of anger will prompt that.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that is in line with the way God reacts to an unjust, unrighteous world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And we are on his side when we step in and change that with words, with
feelings.
And
in the Old Testament, it's interestingly enough, that the good king was the one who always came to the help of the helpless.
Yes.
The widow, the orphan, the stranger, see.
Mm.
And one of the things that Jeremiah got so upset about was these people were taking advantage of other people. Mm. Rather than defending the helpless, they were taking advantage of the helpless. And that just is simply which cannot be done. There's one other aspect I'd like to pick up, Dave. You know, and the ideal that you describe, I think, is a very good one about, you know, self-serving. You know, that you mentioned that first prayer of Jeremiah is pretty hard. I came across a few lines about anger. Is actually from an Anglican bishop, and I'm going to read those two paragraphs because I think it's very helpful. And this is what he says. So shocked are we at the irreverence and so ashamed of the rational absurdity of letting off our aggressions against God that we repress them so far as God is concerned and appear to ourselves not to feel them. And then we wonder why, after we have prayed so devoutly, we feel so bloody-minded towards poor, inoffensive John Smith or sweet little helpful Mary Jones or more often the members of our own family. Your wife, you see, has very often to have thrown at her the rotten eggs you really want to throw at God. And the joke is that God is not in the slightest degree taken in by the pantomime by which you deceive yourselves. He knows what we won't admit to ourselves, that the rotten eggs are really meant for him. When we experience God as a meeting with another to whom we are closely linked as to a father or a friend, then the ambivalence of our feelings is inevitable. It is far better to accept that fact honestly and to admit it to ourselves than to repress it. There is great wisdom in Mrs. Patrick Campbell's warning not to do it in the street and frighten the horses, but that prudent condition observed. If you want to blaspheme, then for Christ's sake, blaspheme. If you want in your prayers to grouse, then for Christ's sake, grouse. If you hate God, then for Christ's sake, tell him you do and tell him why. He will know that these things are the necessary obverse of your love for him and that he is himself responsible for having made you that way. By having the courage of your aggression, you will show a greater trust in him and greater love for him than by all that resigned, submissive, meek stuff, which leaves you to take the hell out of other people and not least out of yourself, so that in consequence there's far less of you to give away. See? See, I think that's the anger, I mean, the powerful prayer, and there are all kinds of those in the Bible that I think that we need to address if we're going to really going to be dealing well. Now, next week we're going to be dealing with symbolic acts. And that's an intriguing one because the symbolic acts can be twisted several different directions, and I want us to be able to deal with that. I want to thank both of you for helping out with our conversations today, and my thanks to David Olson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.